Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back for a second podcast of the week. This one is our midweek domestic podcast focusing on the Premiership Rugby, which there were six cracking games at the weekend just gone. If you were tuning into this one expecting to hear about the Six Nations, well, we love that as well. There's a podcast already in your feed, so go and have a look. And more's the point, hit subscribe. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking. We are would love your support. Patreon.com/eggchasers. You can go and see, look at a video of us there. Absolutely steaming and trying to hide the fact we're steaming when World Rugby followed us on a live podcast, which we very much hope to do again as soon as we're able to. Right, let's get into this podcast then. And there's a couple of little points that we carried over from the earlier podcast that I'm going to start with.
Yes.
JB, firstly, hello.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Phil?
Hello. Hello, gents.
Hello again. How good was that Super Bowl, by the way?
Brady again, eh?
Brady
again. How about... He is one high-level NFL player. There's no two ways about it.
Isn't he just? I mean, just incredible.
Really top-notch at NFL.
And also... Patrick Mahomes, what a player. What an amazing player.
Yeah, a student of the game. He really is a gridiron enthusiast.
Yeah. So just to be clear, we haven't recorded this immediately after the Six Nations podcast. This is a full day later. Mm. Right, you mentioned... I mentioned, because Valentine's Day is coming up this coming weekend, I mentioned a Valentine's Day story, and you know this one, JB, so you tell it.
Do I?
The Broughton Park player who didn't play a game for the club on Valentine's Day.
I do not know the story. Honestly, I do not know the story.
You do. So
was it me? It wasn't me. I would
never. No. There was a game on Valentine's. There was a game on Valentine's Day, and a big important first team game in a push to get up, avoid relegation, I think. And the player didn't play because he was going to the cinema on Valentine's Day.
So
Jamie. I can't remember the name.
Oh, Jamie Harrison.
Jamie Harrison.
No, did he really?
Yeah, he went to watch 50 Shades of Grey with his girlfriend
at the
cinema.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, yeah. So the reason I was like, oh, my God, then, not because I remember that story. I forgot about that completely. It's because another guy who you might refer to as Jamie, but actually his name is James. James Howarth, actually, of Talk H. He once wasn't able to come out for beers with us. Not that he does much anyway, but the reason was... He'd booked to watch the stage show, Matilda. Who does that on a Saturday night?
Wow. I can, what you do with
Matilda?
What you do with your Saturday night, I don't mind. But if you miss a game of rugby because you're watching 50 Shades of Grey, come on. Have a word.
Yeah, I used to do, this is what I used to do on Saturdays, pre-bloody being a prisoner. I on a Sale home game, I would get an Uber to Sale, jump out, interview whichever player I had on the little stage in the shark tanky thing, recall my Uber before Sale kicked off, get back in the taxi with my kit, get to Talk H, and then be ready to take my place either on the bench or in the starting 15 by the time that they kicked off. That was the ideal Saturday for me, and then catch up with the Sale result afterwards in the pub.
Wow, that is commitment.
I remember, here's one thing I remember doing for a while when I used to be the Sale match announcer. And so I used to do a breakfast show on the radio. So, I mean, I leave the house about 4:30 in the morning.
Mm.
I do a breakfast show. My missus used to work in London So I had the kids, and they were both very small at the time. So I'd do my show, I'd get home, look after the kids for a few hours, then a babysitter would come over, and I would go to Sale to watch the game and be the match announcer, and then I would get go into town, where I had a DJ slot at a club in town.
I remember that.
Which went from like 11 p.m. until
3. Where was that? Until, it was something street.
42nd Street.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Right next to the press club.
Indie club. And so that would be, my day would start at 4:30 a.m. and my third job of the day would be between 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. I would get home basically 24 hours after I'd initially got up. So, having done three jobs.
So the advantage of hanging around with a semi-famous person like Tim is occasionally you get these weird invites, which I lap up, but I don't think you particularly enjoy them, Tim. But one of which was the Manchester Food and Drink Awards. And I'll go to any do. If you invite me to a do, I will go to a do. If there's some free champagne and a reason to wear a jacket and some shiny shoes, I'm there. I'm already there. You don't need to convince me of anything more. And thinking about you doing your set in 42nd Street, I met a guy called, I want to say Wingman Dave.
Wingman. He was on the Capital Breakfast Show in Manchester. It's called Nigel.
Nigel.
Yeah. He's a proper character.
Yeah. I really enjoyed his company. But it was one of those things like, I guess it'd be the same thing as if you found out Tubes on Soccer AM was called Fred or something, right? But he told me a story that he was DJing in a club in a slot and wasn't able to mix. So he put on the... like the Pete Tong album of 2006. But halfway through it, it says Pete Tong's Essential Selection.
Fortunately, the tunes I play, the mixing wasn't that important. It's more about picking the right tune. But God, I don't miss those days. Jesus. But I tell you what, getting paid in brown envelopes was brilliant.
Yes, I bet it was.
So good.
Did you feel like a Saracens player?
And with that, let's get on to the podcast.
Let's do it.
Oh, because by the way, Ealing Trailfinders beat Saracens again.
Saracens third in the table. Yeah,
they did.
Saracens third in the table and only two go up. You tell me how this works. Doncaster are dreading it.
Well, and on that front, actually, interesting that the RFU Council were due to meet on Friday for a meeting where it was widely understood they were going to ratify the no relegation from the Premiership this year, and they said all it was just this year, and there's no plans for any lack of relegation or promotion in future years, but at the 11th hour that was pulled from the agenda and was not voted on by the RFU Council on. Hasn't been confirmed why. There are rumours floating around that it had something to do with what all Prem Rugby said is, and the RFU said is, they want more time to discuss the matter with their stakeholders.
Who are the stakeholders, by the way? I hate the idea of stakeholder capitalism.
Well,
and just stakeholders.
Gallagher would be one. BT Sport would be another.
Are they not? Well, yeah, they're not shareholders. They are
stakeholders. CVC.
CVC would be a shareholder. I hate the idea that there's stakeholders, i.e. people without a financial interest. But as long as you've got financial interest, you deserve a say, I think. That said, well, no, hang on. I'm not saying the fans deserve a say, but what you miss out is when you ignore what the needs of the fans are, you're going to have a worse product. You do it for your own sake, not for the sake of the fans. But still. So, yeah, more consultation.
I'm not making a statement here. I'm only reporting what has been written elsewhere in the Times, because obviously I have a situation here where I'm not going to comment or get involved in it, because I'm just reporting what's been said, and apparently it's thought to have been the discussion that needs to be had is thought to be with BT Sport.
Yeah, good for BT Sport for standing their ground on this. Look, closing your league is not necessarily a bad thing. It isn't. The reason we like it open is because we have not got a contraption in place to promote competition. So we have a situation of enforced competition at the bottom of the league with the spectacle of relegation. The only way you can replace relegation, I have come to the conclusion, outside of the naughty step, which is completely impractical but still quite brilliant, is to make more parity within the league, to the point that even the bottom place team by the end of the season still has a shot at doing something. Now, if Premier Rugby have not got a plan for that, they cannot close their league. If they do have a plan for it, let's see your plan and then the RFU Council can vote on it. But it's no good saying, yeah, we're just going to close it off because, well, we are. And the problem with the levelling of the playing field is there are a lot of teams out there who just want to win and they perceive themselves to have a competitive advantage and they don't necessarily want to make the league better so long as they can win the league. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's the only conclusion that I can come to.
Well, the scenario you've just described is exactly what happened with Saracens, as in they unilaterally harmed the overall products of the league by overpaying their players and increasing their winning themselves.
Yeah. This is
exactly what you described.
Conversation for another podcast, and I suspect we'll do this next week when there's a fallow weekend in Six Nations or week after, or whichever one it is, we will do it then. But there needs to be a list of measures from player auctions to minimum squad sizes to maximum and minimum salaries. There's all sorts of things that we need to be looking at in order to replace relegation. And we need to speak about this in more detail another time.
Yeah, it needs to be. I totally agree with that point. If you're going to do it, you don't just do it 7 weeks into a season.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bonkers part of this, is that all of the reasons that they're giving for wanting to have no promotion and relegation this year, or no relegation, sorry, this year, are ones that were known 7 weeks ago when the season began, or 7 rounds ago when the season began, and everybody agreed to the current rules we have. There's nothing that's changed.
Nope.
Nothing that's changed in the last 2 months.
The only thing that's changing at the moment is the stress on both the teams that are not sure if they're coming up and the teams that are not sure they're going down. I imagine it has been communicated to the bottom four teams, you're not going down if that's the case. And if it hasn't, well, they need to. But then they need to confirm it as well, because it's not just the players that go down, it's the whole club. Now, I am in favour of relegation as things stand, but that's why they need to sort it, because there will be people actually wondering, can they pay the mortgage, or can they do whatever it is that they've got to do? And if Gloucester go down, or whoever it is go down, that's going to be in danger. So they need to get a statement about this ASAP.
We're hoping to be resolved in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, I think the fallow week in the Six Nations is a great time for us to really delve into this. I think it's a brilliant shout. It does, as for matters in the Premiership this weekend, I think a lot of people would have just caught bits and bobs. BT Sport had a game on Friday night, they had a game on Sunday, and just worth pointing out as well, there's loads of games on the red button on the red button on the BT Sport channels. I think this coming weekend on both BT Sport 1 and BT Sport 2 on the Saturday, there are red button matches, and you can just flick between any of the games you want, and all of the games, and there were some crackers.
Yep. I have got nearly a grand slam of games. The only game I did not see is Newcastle.
I caught that today.
God. So you watched all, was it four on the Saturday as well?
Yeah, I sat down.
And two Six Nations games.
Yeah, because I didn't watch the Italy one.
Okay, one Six Nations.
And thankfully, it's all melded into one. I can't really remember a single moment from any of the games. That happens, isn't it, when you watch multiple games?
Well, okay, well, I'm gonna kick off with a team that don't get a lot of airtime from us.
Sale.
London Irish got back-to-back wins and have doing some really good things. And this ties in with the Six Nations in as much as I've said it before. In fact, I've been saying it all season. The uncomfortable truth for Ireland is that probably their most in-form and best fly half, or certainly after Johnny Sexton, but maybe even including Johnny Sexton, is Paddy Jackson, who is looking good.
Really good. Really good, yeah. I completely agree with that. As Phil calls him, 2013's Team of the Year, just had a little bit too much for Gloucester. I was really watching this from a Gloucester point of view, because I love this Gloucester side. I think they've got good individuals. I think they've got good structure. I think they've given the right people the right chances. And I just hope Skivington goes well. That said, it is disappointing for them not, to score 26 points and still not be able to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But from the flip side, very good for London Irish. And as Tim said, back-to-back wins. Scoring some nice tries as well. Ollie Hassel Collins is class. We spoke about him a bit last season and earlier this year. He's brilliant, and Tom Parton is electric at fullback.
Yeah,
and obviously they've got the grunt up front, providing they can kind of incentivize it and keep it fit and firing. Adam Coleman pulling his hamstring 2 minutes into the game.
How expensive is that?
So they've got another. Giant Australian journeyman experiencing a new thing in Rob Simmons. So it's just one in, one out.
Exactly. I do wonder if all these expensive players. So sometimes you're an expensive player, and you walk into a team and you see all the other players who are not particularly expensive, and you go, "Oh well, they can't think of playing me. I'm the expensive guy. It'll just go over to these guys. I can do a Sean O'Brien, for want of a better word." I wonder if when these expensive players walk in and see all the other expensive players, they go, "Oh Christ, they expect us to play. I have to play. Or you guys are playing. One of us is playing."
Well, they've got two of the form players in the Premiership in Paddy Jackson, as I mentioned, and Curtis Rona as well in their back line.
Yeah, Curtis Rona's playing very, very well.
Looking great.
Tom Parton's an interesting one because he started off being electric, and sometimes these guys tend to fade, or defences work them out, or they start to mark him a bit more. He's still been very successful.
Yeah, he does look great. But they're playing reasonably well now. Who's their last game against? I watched it as well in detail.
It was against... Did they draw against Harlequins?
They drew against Harlequins, but they there was another game.
It wasn't Newcastle, was it?
It was Newcastle. Yeah. They beat Newcastle. Yeah, because I was admiring Mullipola and Steve Maffey's incredible haircuts and beard combos.
Mm.
Yeah, they played well in that game. But that said, they're playing Newcastle, who have been going well this season but are starting to struggle a little bit, and Gloucester, they're playing two of the bottom teams. So I do think while they've got enough to the 2013 World Rugby Team of the Year pack can beat some of those lower teams, I think they'll struggle against the likes of, well, Sale, Bristol, Exeter and Wasps when Wasps get half their team back.
Another team who look like they will be... Well, oh yeah, Gloucester have got some issues. We spoke about them at length on the last podcast. I don't think anything's really changed.
Not really.
Since that. But another team that we look like they could have been in the mix for the bottom of the table, still could get dragged down, but actually look like they're, you know, elevating their way up the table, is Leicester Tigers, who had a really solid win against Worcester.
I don't really know what the make of Leicester Tigers. Montoya got two tries.
Yeah, and they scored... two or three more tries, which... And that's a good sign if you're a Leicester Tigers fan.
It is.
Yeah.
They identified something quite early on, I think, which is you can win things with an abrasive back row and a veteran scrum half. That's a really, really good core to work from. If your back row can all carry and your scrum half can kick, you can do a lot of stuff with that. So that as a basis and building on top of it, Seems fairly sensible to me.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to see a bit more from Leicester to give me some positive feelings towards them. A lot of that is based around their massive South African back row, who are totally destructive. But yeah, they're positive. Matt Scott's playing well. Freddie Stewart is a real talent. And in Wiggy, they've got someone who they know exactly what they're going to get. And it's mostly good.
Tom Brady of rugby. Simple as that.
They've got all their new they've got all their new players bedded in now. Cobus van Wyk and Nandolo and Moroni as well is now arrived from Argentina in the centre. Muramiravalu. You've got the young guys like Freddie Stewart who are stepping up. So I think I'm with you, Phil. They're not going to challenge the top four, but they're going to have a much more comfortable season than previous.
My only issue with them being, I think they had five English players playing for them on the weekend. Now, other teams will do worse than that on occasion. It's not very Leicester-y. I would like to see them have a few less purchases and a few more youngsters come in, or if they are going to bring in someone. I don't know why. It's not really fair that I speak about Leicester in these terms because I wouldn't do it to any other team. I do feel that they are the quintessential English team. They need more English players. That is their identity, far more than other teams.
The problem with that, though, is they've done things the Leicester way for the last 8 years or so, and it led to them appointing Jordan Murphy and Matt O'Connor twice and everyone else that they appointed in between. I think they need to go away from the Leicester way.
Yeah, and I think the perfect illustration of the way that it's gone, and I've spoken many times about this, and again, some people would fire back at me, this is why you shouldn't have relegation. But Zach Mercer is going to Montpellier, and who's coming into Bath as a number eight? A
South African.
South African.
A massive South African.
Yeah. Right there is all you need to know. And that's the smart move for a Premiership club to make.
It's so smart, isn't it? It's easy. There's loads of them. They're massive.
You play 22 times.
There again, we must have like a degree of diminishing returns here. They can't all be good these South Africans. Yeah, I would have thought that the best ones have now been bought up, and then all you're getting now is, I don't know, the guys who can't make the Currie Cup squads or something.
Where do they keep coming from?
Like a marauding horde.
It's mad. It's insane.
Yeah. So, but Leicester doing well. Worcester, a little bit disappointing in Worcester. These are the kind of games where they've got to get more out of it, where teams are losing multiple England players or multiple international players.
Yeah, you're right.
They've got to do a bit more. And yeah. I do like, there's a lot of things to like about Worcester, but they've got to do more in this kind of game.
Yeah, I really like Worcester as a club. I like clubs that operate on a shoestring and put together some decent performances.
You love an underdog, don't you? And they're an underdog.
I do. And I just like, there's a lot to like about Alan Solomons. I was not inspired about the choice of him as a DOR at all. But he has proved pretty much everyone wrong there. He's done very, very well. And I like how they play. I like the...
Young Andrew Kitchener loved that appointment.
Oh, do you know what? He's from such good family. He really is a upstanding young man.
And they're bringing some talent through as well. Like the two young lads, obviously, Ollie Lawrence is incredibly talented. Sadly, we didn't get to see enough of that this weekend. Mm. But Ted Hill as well. I highly rate Ted Hill. I think I know he's only on the bench this weekend, but
Club
I think
captain,
he's a superb player. Yeah, club captain.
Yep, agreed.
At 22 or whatever he is.
Well, another team who, I mean, it's quite surprising, bearing in mind the run they had. Northampton Saints have now had three wins on the bounce.
Is it not two? Who have they had? They beat Gloucester.
They beat Worcester. Gloucester.
Wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was not a great game. Well, it feels like this is a difficult one to watch. So both these teams I quite like. To get that far ahead for Saints is encouraging. They played well. But to let Wasps back into it is not great. And also, they could have lost this. They could have lost this multiple times. Wasps were very unfortunate, I felt, not to get a try just before the break. And there's still a lot of holes in Northampton's game. I think what they do well, i.e. going out the back. They still haven't solved the problem of getting over the gain line, all their big runners.
Well, again, we'll wait and see when they come up against one of the big sides. But one big problem that was at the heart of, I think, was the core issue with most of that bad run they were on, their scrum, is a lot better. They've done something there.
Yeah. I mean, they caught all... Their scrum was so bad, and they had so many good players. You wonder what was going on, like, coaching-wise or as confidence, because, the Franks brothers... aren't exactly, or one of the Franks at least, is not exactly a bad scrummager. Ethan Waller has been there for a long time.
Alex.
Hill is a good prop.
But they pumped
Waller
Wasps.
Is a good,
sorry, they pumped Waller. Wasps.
What's the one? What is your one? Painter.
But they pumped Wasps.
Well, 22-17?
No, in the scrum. They pumped them.
Oh, right, yeah. So, yeah, they really
so compared to how they have been, that's one big fundamental base cornerstone that they've got right, they've sorted, appear to have sorted.
And that was disappointing, actually, because Wasps at times have been really good in the scrum, and you don't expect that from Wasps. What you expect from Wasps is free-flowing, offloading tries from everywhere. What they're actually quite good at is being efficient in the 5 meter in the 5 meter area, and they were not efficient at all, not nearly enough. But I honestly think they are second only to Exeter in converting chances 5 metres out. They do it very differently. They have a lot more energy and a lot more quickness around the ruck. But they're very good at it. And that sort of just fell away.
Mm.
Oh, they also started Charlie Atkinson. I think that's worthy of note as well. So they started Charlie Atkinson. He did all right. Came off for Umonga, who had some good bits and then some horrendous bits.
What do Wasps, other than getting, I don't know, half a dozen players back from fitness and internationals, what do Wasps need to do differently?
I think they pretty much carry on exactly as they are. So they got hammered by Harlequins, who were a mirror image of them when they played, except better. They were better in every department, stronger, more experienced, more talented. And it's one of those freak results which just happened. This Northampton game is different. Wasps could have won this, and I think with a bit more maturity, they would have. So the one thing you do not want when you are 22 points down is a young fly half, your youngest fly half, even younger than your actual... So you've got a young fly half, and then you've got a younger fly half, and that's the one that you went with. And then you've got a fairly inexperienced scrum half. That's not the combo that you need. Yet they did all right. They did fine. Fekitoa coming back is really interesting because he offers them a huge target through the centre. So when you can, when you fail to make yards through your centres, you can all you can always give it to him. I think with what with the resources they've got available, they are doing broadly the right things, yeah. And they could have won this.
And I think they were better in this game than they were in the previous game, and I think they're getting better. And I actually, again, I think the change actually has turned out to be brilliant, and Lee Blackett's been a breath of fresh air. I also feel a little bit sorry for Dai Young, and this is tying it to right now. Dai Young was without Jimmy Gopeth, Jack Willis, Dan Robson, a few other very, very key players out with long-term injuries all at the same time. Dai Young didn't have those. And for the same reason, I wouldn't panic if I was Lee Blackett. You plug those players back into this Wasp team, and they're back to being the Wasps that can that can beat any team in the league. They do not have a deep squad.
Yeah, they really don't, actually. But do you know what I have very little tolerance for, which is the argument, oh, once we get our players back, everybody has players out all of the time. I mean, if you want to play that game, we'll just go and get Courtney Laws an Uber back and go and put Dan Bigger on a train.
Well, no, but
do you know what I mean?
Which is why I stressed that Wasps have a shallow squad. They spend literally millions of pounds less than other sides.
They do.
And as a result, they have a much shallower squad. So the impact of having half a dozen very important, influential players out is massive. And so I wouldn't panic if I was Wasps.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because you're obviously and demonstrably right. But then having that thinness of squad, I mean, I wonder which other clubs would be playing Charlie Atkinson or playing Jacob Umo or basically having both of those guys.
They trust these guys, don't they?
Sapoanga could have played. He was fit. Nah, we're all right, thanks. We'll go with it.
He trusts them and it's paid off a lot.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sale. Anyone watch Sale?
Yeah,
what do we think?
Gritty.
So I a few weeks ago I predicted that Quins would beat Bristol and obviously got it embarrassingly wrong. And I promised then that I'd never bet against Bristol this season. But then I broke that promise this weekend because I put a few quid on Sale to win.
Did you? Sneaky.
Yeah, because I saw they were Bristol were Sale were 4-1, and I was like. That, especially when Luatua was out in the warm-up. I was like, with Randa out and off the back of that amazing win against Bath and Sale are such a tough team, I thought, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bet against Bristol. And obviously won 80 quid on the back of it.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Quite pleased with that. But on it, gritty is probably the right word from Sale, because they didn't play very much good rugby. They had some amazing things. That the final try, Luke James's try, and the McGinty pass for it was,
yeah, I love that pass.
Incredible. That was superb. But Sale's scrum was creaking left, right, and centre. I mean, Afoa, had Bristol won, Afoa should have been man of the match, because he was amazing in the tight, winning penalty after penalty. Sale's lineout was creaking. Bristol's lineout looked great most of the game. And Sale just found a way to win.
They came at this game with a ton of enthusiasm in defence. Now, I'm not going to tell you where I got this information from, or, you know, and it's not particularly damning or anything. I cannot find so much as a single bad word about Alex Sanderson anywhere. It is like they have all signed up to the Church of Scientology. Like, it's one of the most, but they don't even say good. They just look at you and put their thumbs up. What's the new guy like? Thumb in the air, massive grin.
So we did a little charity podcast the other night, which you won't get to hear, unfortunately. So it was for Broughton Park.
I forgot you've already heard me say this.
Our local rugby... No. I was going to say, our local rugby club, we did a podcast for...
No, your local rugby club. Mine's Tock H.
Well, it's our local rugby club. It's the nearest rugby club to where we live, JB.
Well, I mean, in terms of distance to travel.
Yeah.
Tock H is closest to my heart.
It's our local rugby club. And we've both played there. All three of us have played there. So anyway, they were doing a live stream event to try and... give everyone at the club a sense of community. Really good idea, actually. And we did a little live stream show for them. And on that, we discussed this. And afterwards, we just stayed on. We stayed on after we'd finished, and we're having a little chat. And we were talking about this. And Phil used the word cult. He said it almost sounds like a cult.
It does.
And then in the pre-match bit in the build-up on BT Sport on Friday night, there was an interview with Alex Sanderson who said, "Oh, maybe I shouldn't use this word, but I suppose I've sort of cultivated a cult."
Yeah.
He actually used the word himself.
The guy... Like,
uh-oh.
It's so strange. They're like,
Gatorade is now Kool-Aid.
It's like, yeah, we're starting to know what each other's parents do. And again, this is one of those things which I am more than happy for you to know the profession of John O'Ross's dad. I think he's a vet, actually. providing you know your line-out calls.
Nick Kennedy?
Mum's an author.
Jack Knoll.
Jack Knoll. Fishmonger.
Fisherman.
Ah, every time I get it wrong.
Johnny May.
Good question.
We've had...
Wasn't she like a music teacher and she taught Ed Sheeran?
Really?
Is that right?
I think that has been mentioned before.
Luke Narraway.
Butcher.
Yep.
That's a butcher.
That's a butcher. And the name of Marlon Jarre's dad.
Name of Marlon Jarre's dad.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. It's something ridiculous, isn't it?
It's a great name.
Scotland?
Yes, it is Scotland Yard.
You're joking. I was joking.
All right, no, it's Scotland Yard.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, by all means, tell me what Scotland Yard does for a living, as long as you've got your lineouts nailed down. It's interesting, right? Because...
Hold on, I feel like...
That we've not made enough of that.
We've not made enough of it. I don't know what Phil's dad did, or mum or dad did or do.
We can find out another time.
Oh, okay, fine.
Well, maybe on our... When we finally get to see each other in person, or I get to see you guys in person for strictly work purposes.
I feel like
only.
I should know this stuff now.
So here's the interesting part about this, right?
How can we really call ourselves a podcast team if we don't know this stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So the interesting part I found was... think about it. If you're professional... If you go to work every day... Maybe you don't know what everyone does for what everyone's parents do. Maybe that's just a thing. And I thought about in a rugby club such as an amateur one, you do know a lot more about the individuals because the first thing you ask them is, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" And they'll tell you. And then that goes on to another conversation.
You especially make conversation like that when you're thinking of having an extension.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. electrician, you say. Fascinating. But I guess if you are a professional rugby player and your job is rugby player, you sort of know what they do for a living. And then it's just, I don't know, training and whatnot. And I just thought, like, maybe in a workplace scenario, you do know a lot less about your fellow co-workers. That said, and I do strongly believe this, they do have one of the best jobs on the planet, which is professional athlete of any type. What's wrong with just going to work to be a rugby player rather than having a higher purpose? Why can't you just enjoy that? Just enjoy your line-out calls and enjoy going to work as a rugby player. Why do you need something more? But it does work, and they absolutely love him.
Yeah, cult.
Cults. So that might explain why they are playing so bloody hard in defence. And the knock-on effect of that is Johan Lloyd looked like a 19-year-old with a bit of talent. That's exactly how he looked.
And AJ, oh my goodness. I still think back to our fantasy rugby draft.
What a player.
How did I pick him up in round 5, I think it was?
People are stupid, Tim.
Outrageous.
Word. People are stupid.
JB, how come you... I normally just ignore Sale players because I know you always pick them up about 2 or 3 rounds too early. How did you not pick him up?
I don't know. Do you know what? I got stupid and careless and I picked up Joe Simmons.
Not forgetting that Exeter kicked to the corner a lot, so Joe Simmons doesn't take lots of penalty kicks.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous decision. Look, I've made my bed. I'll lie in it. And occasionally I get things wrong too.
Yeah. No. But AJ is
dynamite.
Him and Paddy Jackson are vying for the best 10 in the Prem.
Well, they're arguably both the second best Irish fly half on the planet.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Do you know what AJ's dad does?
School teacher?
Headmaster at Blackrock.
There you go. No
big deal.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
He said to me, because he was injured for a long time, so I was able to watch Sale play and I'd often sit next to him and we'd chat, and he said to me, yeah, my dad's really into schoolboy rugby, he's a real nose on it. That to me is like, oh yeah, he's a bit of a fan, reads in the back of the paper, not that he's headmaster at bloody Blackrock College.
Yeah, he's like one of the ultimate production lines for Irish rugby.
Yeah,
he has direct access to that, and he's the main man at the institution.
Yeah, I mean, that is almost like Owen Farrell describing his dad as a rugby union enthusiast.
Or rugby league enthusiast.
Yeah, he likes both codes quite a lot, actually. Yeah, he keeps up with the scores.
How do you think... So, AJ was brilliant, cool as ice, and that pass was incredible. How do you feel this game went for young Johan Lloyd?
It's a reality check, isn't it?
It is after everything going so well, so perfectly, it is a bit of a reality check.
That said, he had some lovely touches. I mean, the boy is clearly outrageously gifted.
Yes.
I think he's... I mean, this might be a little bit early to call this, but yeah, he might be on like Marcus Smith level of gifted. I mean, not quite yet. Maybe slightly different in the way he runs, but there's a lot to like about him.
I think he's amazingly talented.
Yeah, I think he is as talented.
Yeah.
Maybe even more so in some respects. And he looks brilliant when he's on the wing. He looks great at fullback. He looks good at 10.
Mm. Yeah,
can only be that if you've got the whole box of tricks.
The fact that Wales have capped him already tells you a lot about, you know, how desperate they are to keep this young man. I would love him to test this Welsh system to destruction. Like, no, I'm not going. I'm going to stay at Bristol. I know I spoke about this last week, so I won't dwell on it, but I really hope he stays with Bristol. And apparently his brother's very good and he's in the academy.
Mm.
There's two of them.
Yeah, I thought Sale did very well to put him under pressure and get up in his face and make life difficult for him. But I think he'll learn a huge amount from that game, from losing in those circumstances. So I think, well, it's a bad single performance, I think it will be a good marker going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think marker is the right word there, Phil, because for Sale to take down Bristol at Ashton Gate and Bristol still to be top of the table. Are they top of the table?
Bristol are top. Yeah, Exeter are back to second.
So, huge win for Sale. You know, the top three teams all have six wins.
Mm-hmm.
there's quite a drop-off after that. So I think we know who the top three teams are.
Yeah.
I expect those three to carry on going in the same direction and there to be an almighty scrap for fourth.
Well, there'll be an almighty scrap for first as well because you don't want to play the other two in a semi.
No, you don't.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Although, I don't think I would fear Bristol in a semi-final nearly as much as Exeter. So as long, just avoid Exeter, really. There again, Quinn's currently sit fourth, and the way that they're going, I mean, from absolute, utter, hopeless clowns to semi-dangerous in 2 weeks.
Well, I can't help but think Quinn's are getting the bounce, the dysfunctional DOR club combo, and they're getting the bounce because they're able to kind of be themselves and normal and had the shackles unleashed. I can't see this level of performance.
Yeah.
Certainly on the level of last week, that they simply cannot continue that over any significant period of time.
Yeah. Who the hell is Archie White? Who is this kid?
He's been knocking around in the first team squad for a little while. Him and Dino Lam in the back five of the scrum.
Really? So he's started consecutive games. I've been impressed both times with him. Good build on the kid. Works bloody hard. And he just seems to fit in nicely with Dombrand and who was there that they didn't have? Oh, yeah, they did have Will Evans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think, I wonder if he's going to be like the unsung third wheel because Will Evans gets a ton of praise, as does Dombrand, rightly so. By the way, he was ace again. He just seems like the guy who's willing to pick up all the hard work.
You've got James Chisholm who does that as well. I was going to say, if... because you just mentioned Alex Dombrand, and he would be my answer to this question. But if you had to pick one player that you could force into the England squad, who would you pick? And mine would be, I've said this before the Six Nations squad was picked, I'd take Alex Dombrand and I'd force Eddie to have him in his squad.
You know the guy I really like?
A lot of people would say Sam Simmons, I'm sure, or Joe Simmons, or Marcus Smith. Who would you say?
Who I really like? I'm going to give a shout-out to a completely random player now. What are you on about, you psychopath? I really like Josh Bayliss from Bath. I really like him.
Mm, good player.
He's not just a good player. He's actually a player that bothers showing up. I was thinking about this. Who would I take from Bath? And the answer is nobody. Not one player would I want to sign, except for Josh Bayliss. I love that guy. And I reckon if he was put in a better situation, he might be in contention for something. Because he plays second row, he plays back row, he works bloody hard, he's effective, he's strong. Yeah, he's a good player. Sadly, nobody else seems to care.
So, Josh Bailey, who would you force into an England squad?
Given how badly the wingers played, give me... Ollie Thorley.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
I do like it. I know he's been there or thereabouts, but there's something that... Because he's been in multiple squads, but I don't know if he's actually even got a cap. He might have one cap for 2 minutes.
I think he does.
I think he has a cap from the Autumn Internationals.
Is he qualified to play somewhere else?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bath. Let's do that, shall we?
So yeah, fair play, Quinns. That was good showing again. And but Bath, the one caveat I would put here with Bath is it was very poor. And again, this highlights when we were talking about Leicester earlier and the players that they sign. And Bath have got lose a lot of players.
They do. I'm just looking at this. Mercer, ace. Spencer, supposedly ace. Priestland, supposedly ace. Cock and Singer, supposedly ace. Matavesi, pretty good.
Well, not only this.
Rocket Dagouni.
This is what I find...
What the hell? What is going on here?
So this is what I find interesting, and it's worth remembering, because we only had a three-week break between the end of the season and the start of the season. Let's think back to only 2.5/3 months ago, when everyone was saying, wow... Ben Spencer, the missing piece of the jigsaw. Bath, how much have they improved? Oh my God, this is so much better. They've got positive times ahead. So this was the same coach. It was the same players. Massively different levels of performance.
I mean, they are bad, aren't they? They are bad. Would you be kind enough to do your Stuart Hooper shirt impression again? Or is that just for offline only?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Thankfully for everyone involved, there was not any post-match interviews for this game because I think the broadcast is online only. It's on, it's off, and that'll be the end of it. There was one of the most awkward shirt ceremonies I've ever seen, with the Bath players standing in a circle pre-game. It's like straight out of a management textbook. I don't know what it is. I feel like I'm being unduly harsh now. It just didn't get the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. Let's put it that way. How would you describe it, Tim?
Corporate. I could see what the intent of it was, but yeah, you're right. It didn't have the impact that I think you hoped something like that would have.
Yeah, it
was basically giving out jerseys to debutants for the side.
Yeah.
Their first cap for Bath.
Do you know when androids tell jokes? This is what humans find funny.
I'll just say, listen to last week's podcast if you want to hear my thoughts on that. There are clearly issues. It may well be Stuart Hooper, but I'm not willing to just purely say it's Stuart Hooper because there are players that should be doing a lot better, irrespective of coaching or systems. There's effort issues at times, and I think
there is effort issues. You're not wrong.
The defence is one of the biggest indicators of that, that there is a lack of effort, which is unforgivable.
Yeah. Harlequins on paper do look like a team that should have won this game. Harlequins on paper are no real indication of anything. Hey, they win another one. They're on a roll. They're on a real roll. So I don't know what to make of them. They're currently at fourth. They might fight out for fourth place with London Irish when it's all said and done.
Mm.
It's quite interesting.
Unlikely, but it is possible.
Tell you who I do like. Do you know who I really like?
Go on.
Andre Esterhazen.
He adds a certain something to their midfield, doesn't he?
Yeah, my kind of guy. Just give him the ball, let him go forward, and then let Marcus Smith do it. He does a Jamie Roberts job better than Jamie Roberts.
Yeah, well, he's as big as Jamie Roberts, if not even slightly bigger.
His sheer presence,
massive.
Yeah, his sheer presence creates space for Marcus Smith and the players outside him.
110 kilograms, 6'4". Cheers. Thanks very much.
Yeah, have a bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Bit of South African steel in your midfield.
Yeah, do you know, I'll answer your question, Tim, in a more serious way. I would force Eddie to pick Marcus Smith and start him. Force him. Marcus Smith, Ollie Lawrence, Henry Slade. Oof.
When you think go on.
I was going to say, if you'd have done that 2 years ago, JB, you would have had one thing right on the whiteboard.
Yeah, well, it's not my fault that people conspire against me.
I think back to England and then I look at the way that players are performing and I just cannot believe there's not another specialist number 8 in that England squad. And a lot of people would like that to be Sam Simmons and I could sympathise with that. He scored again. He looked great again. His footwork is brilliant. And Exeter, whilst being unconvincing, had a solid win away at Newcastle.
Got it done, didn't they? Newcastle's bloody hard to go to now. They are not the jokes that we thought they'd be. Far from it, actually. They're an incredibly good outfit. Very, very good win.
Mm.
On your Dombrun point, Tim, the more you watch him, the more impressive he gets. And I think now that he's been turned loose, he seems to have gone up another level in the last few games.
That's how he always plays. He's always, his support angle is very kind of Chris Ashton-esque. He's just got a great rugby brain. And he, and much like Phil talked about in the last podcast about Antoine Dupont, Don Brandt just pops up at the right moment in the right time because he's just reads the game so well. He's natural. And all the jokes were made about his university rig. The fact is, whilst he had a university rig, he was still able to make an impact because his rugby brain is so natural. Mm-hmm. And that translates. We talked about Cam Redpath being to the man born at international level. And the reason for that is he has a really smart, natural, instinctive rugby brain. And when we talk about England trying to solve problems on the hoof, it's that kind of rugby intellect that you need. Rather than just trying to run harder with bigger men at players, actually, sometimes someone who can pick a great line, do something unpredictable, And for that reason, I kind of sympathise with you saying about Marcus Smith, but those are the kind of characters that make an impact at international level.
Yeah. I think I would go with bigger and harder. That's what I would... I mean, you made an impassioned case, Tim, but I'm not convinced.
How do you go bigger than Billy Vonopola?
More athletic. I think you can get... I would say... look at the Dupree brothers or a...
okay, an England player. How based on the English qualified available players?
That's a very good question. Who is bigger? Do you know who hits bloody hard and is coming back into some form? I know he's nowhere near the international picture, but maybe he would be in a different guise. Dave Attwood's coming back into some form, and he is hitting bloody hard and carrying hard. I'm not saying he plays eight for England. I'm just saying that is a man that they could use.
Charlie Yules has played eight for England. So.
No, thank you. Carl Ferns, if only he was in England. If only he was qualified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. Maybe towards the end of the season. Who knows? Things might change.
Mm.
So is that all the games covered off
from
last week? So, should we just do the upcoming matches? And should we do them quickly? Because we've got, like, I don't know, 15 minutes before something happens.
before the greatest show on turf. I mean, before dinner's ready.
Yeah, before dinner's ready. Yeah, of course. So, Friday night, it's the Church of Scientology against the...
yes. Yes, that's what they're being called.
against the management consultants, Bath.
we should come up with nicknames for all the teams. Church of Scientology versus versus Bath PLC.
I mean, if
Sale win,
if Sale don't win, it's going to be a bloody hard podcast on Sunday. Yep. After all things I've said,
your old team versus your new team.
yeah, quite.
Sale by at least 15 points.
Sale 5 points to zero.
Okay. Harlequins Leicester. Nice.
You've missed one.
Oh, well, this is just how it's coming up on my app. Why? What have you?
Gloucester Bristol. Ooh. Friday night.
Well, that's an interesting one.
Oh, I know why I've done this. I'm looking at the bloody Sale fixtures, not the. how have I done this? What am I looking at?
Bristol are going to win. Bristol are going to win that at King's Home. Although at King's Home, Gloucester have got performances in them. They showed that against Ulster.
Well, so the reason why I actually put some money on Bristol to lose at home against Sale last weekend was because I don't think maybe they're catching up now, but I don't think the bookies had caught on to the fact that with no crowds, home advantage in the Guinness Premiership appears to be negligible.
A great point.
Who the hell did the bookies employ? And this is probably the wrong question, actually. Who know so much about rugby, like they can get it so close.
It's a great point. It is a hole in the market because bookies do not understand rugby.
Well, you'd have thought so, but they clearly do because I can't get one over on them. Or maybe I just don't understand rugby. And I think we found the problem here. User error.
So Bristol are going to win away at Gloucester. Yes, they will.
Yes, Bristol will right the wrongs. Did either of you hear the Pat Lamb pre-match? Talk about the good fortune that Semi Randranda is out for 8 weeks.
No, what did he say? Why is that good?
Because
it could have been worse.
Basically, that is the principle. He was like, you know, it's really good news because it's not completely ruptured the ligament. They've basically managed to find it while it's still intact. Had it have gone wrong, it could have been. Well, season ending.
That is good news. That's good news for all concerned. So he's not wrong.
Cracking bit of shit posting by Sale Sharks as well on their Twitter feed. They said, "Oh, we're really sorry, Semi can't be playing tonight, but we understand he'll be watching the game in his room." And they had a picture of Semi Randranda, like a head on a kid sat on a bed with loads of pictures of Sam James on the walls. Very good.
Yeah,
that was good.
That seems to have made the rounds, that little meme. People are reappropriating it for others. Anyway, on Bristol, I guess it does give an opportunity for other lads to have a crack at it. And one of my rapidly becoming more favourite players, Piers O'Connor, who will probably slip in at 13.
As he did against Sale.
Yeah, unless he carries on dominating at 12. That's another guy England should have a look at. Just even if it's just bring him in his camp. And also, what's wrong with Eddie? Is he not scared that someone else might cap him? Oh, we've spoke about this, haven't we? He's in a Dutch auction.
Yeah. Yeah. Next game.
Okay. Saturday's game. So, Quinns, Tigers.
Quinns at home. Not that home matters, Quinn. Oh, no. That's... Quinns will edge that. I think this will be a really good game. I think Quinns will edge this one.
This feels to me like...
Narrowly. Well, that'd be... No. Actually, Quinns have done too well for too long.
Yeah. Give me Leicester. I can't see Quinns carrying this on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And Leicester's massive South African back row will give Quinns the shake-up they need.
Yeah, I might join you there. Just a narrow Leicester win. I think there will be a couple of points either way and a good game, this one.
Agreed. I'm going with Leicester as well. Mm. I'm not willing to put any faith in Harlequins just yet. So, Team of the Year 2013, a face-off against the Chiefs.
Exeter to win this.
Exeter to win.
Yeah, agreed.
And then Northampton, Newcastle.
Newcastle, please.
So, I'm going to go Saints narrowly. But again, much like the Quinns Leicester one, this one's hard to call. I'll go Saints.
I think Newcastle. Saints, lot of talent in their backs. I love this young lad, Tommy Freeman.
Yeah, he had a great week for you in fantasy rugby draft. And
he did all right.
He did all right. Yeah, I know. And I had the Northampton front row who scored two tries. And I had them, and I forgot, in sort of JB fashion, I forgot to put them in my team. And lost to the better man this week. Well played, Phil. Thanks to Toby Freeman and Alex Cuthbert.
Who scored like 75% of my points between them.
Yeah.
Particularly after Adam Coleman and Nemanja Nadolo played 11 minutes and got 0.3 points between the two of them.
I had three men with minus points, maybe even four. Sam James, Matavesi, John O'Ross, and there's another one who had minus points. And I think, like, this is not... I feel like Stuart Hooper. This is not my fault. What can I do?
One game week last year, didn't you finish on 3 points?
Yeah.
It only counts if you've got a full team, though. If you've got a full team starting, then your minimum score counts. But like, how do you come back from that?
Tough.
It's like you and Hoops could have a good old chat about that.
How they let us down all the time.
Yeah, John O'Ross is the kind of guy that you want on your team when you're playing an actual rugby game. He's not the kind of guy you want on your fantasy rugby draft team.
Not sure about that, mate,
when you're playing it.
I'm not sure about that. He's been on my team for 3 years now. Yeah. 1 year we made a semi-final. So.
Okay, so Tim, you're going Saint Northampton. Yep. Me and JB are going Newcastle.
Correct.
And then final game, Worcester Wasps.
This could actually be game of the weekend.
I'll say Wasps narrowly.
42-40 to Wasps.
Yeah, it'll be something like that.
Yeah.
They've both got a win. I just like, give me Worcester.
Nice.
Give me Worcester. Both teams have to win this. I mean, they don't because there's going to be no relegation, but they do have to win this.
It's essential that they win.
Exactly.
There we go. That is the podcast. Thank you for listening. If you haven't listened to the Six Nations one already, it's in your feed. But we are the podcast 52 weeks of the year that has a podcast waiting for you every Monday morning and multiple podcasts in the same week. So thank you for listening. That's all we ask of you. If you appreciate it, however, you can show your support, as many people, a humbling number of people have done, and we really appreciate that.
Are we doing the shirt draw for them next week?
Yes. We will make the shirt draw in the week and announce it on the next podcast that we do, where we're going to be giving away shirts to Patreon followers and other assorted goodies, and there's some stuff up there as well at patreon.com/eggchasers. He's at JBeardmore. I'm at Cocker on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. Phil is lurking in your DMs. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Sweet.
Perfect.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.